because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, this week in Wisconsin's capital. J.R., when he was a presidential candidate, the governor didn't do a whole lot on foreign policy, but he got dragged into it this week.
Yes.
And the question of Syrian refugees. He joined, I think, 30 other governors saying,
at least, yep,
thou shalt not come here, Syrian refugees. Let's just read two sentences from his statement. Our state will not facilitate the coordination or provision of benefits or services for individuals whose presence could pose a potential risk to our people. We will make all efforts to ensure that Syrian refugees are not resettled within the boundaries of the state. He was joined by Republican lawmakers. Let's read two sentences from Assembly Speaker Voss. Wisconsin citizens are our first priority and their safety must come first. With no guarantee that a refugee does not have an association with radical Islamic terrorists, we cannot take any chances. And the final quote comes to us from President Obama. In the Philippines, apparently they, Republicans, are scared of widows and orphans coming into the United States. They are scared of three-year-old orphans. That doesn't seem so tough to me. J.R., does Walker and Republicans like Voss, do they have a winning issue on this because of the fear?
Oh, sure. But remember, Walker, though, it's not just this week it's been an issue for him. He actually said back in the, during the campaign for president that he opposed allowing more Syrian refugees to come here. So there's that issue.
Okay, so then, he'd already staked out a position on it.
Add in another nuance to that, that the House voted on a bill that to Republicans, what they're trying to define it as would make it, you know, more restrictive, if you will, or a tougher screening process.
Much tighter.
Ron Kind, Democrat from La Crosse, voted with Republicans on that bill.
Was he one of the 47?
Veto-proof majority, essentially.
Yep.
If everybody holds on the veto, which sometimes doesn't happen with your party as your president of your party. But anyway, there's that as well. So you're seeing not just Republicans raise the issue, but also Democrats as well. There is obviously fear whenever there's an attack. People are nervous about what's going to happen here. So It's an issue. Now, one thing about what the governor said this week, remember on Monday, first day, he said, we will not allow, like no one will settle here. The next day was, we will not cooperate, because there are questions about whether Governors can really prevent refugees from coming. Incident in Indiana, or example in Indiana, where Governor Pence said, nobody comes. There's a family scheduled to be resettled in Indiana.
Yeah.
They diverted them to Connecticut, part because the local agency said, look, they're not welcome. If they're not welcome here, we don't try to enforce this issue and have these guys be a target. So let's get them out of here and go to Connecticut, where the governor said, hey, we're happy to take these
folks.
Yeah,
just this week, I did an interview with a UW professor on this very issue. And she said the 1980 Refugee Act really gives ultimate authority to the federal government on this issue of refugees. That they're interviewed by the UN, they're interviewed by Homeland Security. It's a long process. But they do need, in order to be resettled here, they do need to partner up with NGOs and like Catholic Social Services, Lutheran Social Services. So do you think, given that some of these NGOs may want to stay on the good side of governors, they won't cooperate if the federal government says, here, Wisconsin, take 300 Syrian refugees?
That's the issue. The governor said that the state government will not cooperate at all with this. And also remember, too, the White House has kind of lost the message, if you will, or lost the battle of the message on this. They had a conference call with governors this week. They also did a meeting with members of Congress. And from what I read nationally, Democrats walked out of that meeting less enthusiastic about the president's plan than they were going in.
Yes.
So they've lost those guys. If you can't keep your party together on a vote like that, that's the issue. Now, the bill that passed the House, uncertain prospects in the Senate. Maybe Harry can keep his caucus together better than Pelosi did.
Yeah.
And the president would likely veto it. So there's still that big concern about what's going to happen with that going forward.
So it's where Wisconsin is, bottom line, Wisconsin is a long way from accepting and assimilating some of these Syrian refugees.
And it's not alone in that either.
Even though, a footnote, the UW prof we interviewed said Wisconsin assimilated 70,000 Hmong back in the 70s and 80s. So it's a very interesting. Okay, topic two. So the Census Bureau comes out and it says Wisconsin has the 11th highest tax burden, and then you did a big item on that. The Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance says, no, we're not. Oops. So what happened there?
Well, essentially, remember, the Taxpayers Alliance has been doing this study for years.
Yes.
They take census information, throw it through a formula, and come out with where our rankings are. We have been, generally speaking, the top 10, 12, 13, you know, roughly there. I think at 20 years ago, somewhere around there.
We were.
15, 20?
Well, and that just speaks to how this, our rankings, become such an issue in our campaign for governor and for
campaign
the ledge.
Campaign for governor, also the perception of the business climate. I mean, it's on the line about, like, what Wisconsin is like.
Yep.
Anyway, the Taxpayers Alliance are digging with it, and the day they put out their first number said, you know, something doesn't seem right. Went back and looked, and the feds have not been counting our property tax credits the same way we do, like the school levy credit.
Mm-hmm.
They're counting it as an intergovernmental transfer, not as a tax break.
Right.
Because of that, it drops our per person tax burden a little bit. And so we go, most of the time, a couple spots. You know, it's not like it's a huge, we're not going from 12th to 50th or anything like that.
I know.
You're seeing a small shift, but it's not as bad, or if your perspective is it's bad to be top 10, it's not as bad as we thought it was. Now, the lowest I think we've been, going back to when I first got here in 2000, was Doyle years number 16, mm-hmm. when Doyle was governor and Republicans were in charge. Mm-hmm. That year, they revised it down to 19, I think it is.
Yep.
So we're still top 20, no matter how you look at it. Now, the other caveat is, the latest numbers only go through 13, I believe.
They do.
We don't have the big tax break from 14, where Republicans pushed through and a couple Democrats.
Cut the income tax.
Redid the withholding taxes for, withholding tables for income taxes, pumped $400-some million into the tax levy to buy down
tech colleges
and a small income tax break. Add that all up. Now, that should help us as well if you want to drop the rankings.
Yeah.
Provided other states can do the same thing. Remember, it's not just about what we do. It's what other states do as well. So
vis-a-vis the other states' tax burden.
Bottom line is we are not a lower-tier tax state, but we're not a top 10 tax state according to these numbers anymore.
Okay, but let's go a little deeper in that just for a minute, because mm-hmm. that same taxpayer report said we are a property tax, 3.9% of income taken by property tax, 18% more than the national average. Our state income tax takes 3% of income, 10th in the nation. But the other side of that is that our sales tax are lower, mm-hmm. and the WTA pointed out that our alcohol taxes are lower, partly because we haven't raised our beer tax since it was implemented in the late 1960s. So overall, the alliance said Wisconsin ranks lower on taxes plus fees, 18th, than on taxes only, 15th. So,
and don't forget, there's other measures too, like per capita spending by government. You know, we are traditionally a high tax, low fee state. So your gas tax is high, but your registration fee is low.
Mm-hmm.
Your income tax is high. Going to UW-Madison is still a pretty good deal compared to most of the Big Ten. So that's been our tradition.
Yeah.
The question becomes, is it a right mix? The sales tax, for example, there was some talk at one time about raising that to get rid of the income tax. Some states that do very well in these rankings or business climate rankings don't have a income tax or a corporate tax or a
Florida,
they drop
no
one.
Income tax, yeah. Yes.
Will yeah. we ever do that? I don't know if we'll get to that point. The other issue is, all of a sudden, if you look at our revenues, all the talk about doing away with X back in the 13s and 14s when we had all this revenue coming in has gone away because there's a Medicaid problem. We have revenue coming in, but we have a Medicaid problem we can't quite solve. Until you fix all that, you can't talk about getting rid of a tax. Now, they also want to try and cut taxes again next year. Republicans will.
Yeah.
Can they find the money with schools, roads, Medicaid?
Well, just a P.S. Do you remember when Governor Doyle and the Democrats created a fourth higher mm-hmm. tax bracket?
Hasn't gone away yet.
Hasn't gone away, although they kind of nudged it down maybe by just a little bit.
They collapsed the number of tax brackets. Was it five? Now we're down to four or
yeah.
so three, something like that.
Yeah.
So
the bottom line, the Census Bureau says, Wisconsin, you're number 11th highest tax. The Wisconsin Taxpayer Alliance says, excuse me, we're number 15. So we should have T-shirts and a cheer. We're number 15.
And now for Republicans, the message this week was kind of, hey, it's still not good enough. We want to get lower. For Democrats, it was, at what price have we paid to drop these rankings? You know, is it worth it to have schools, university system, and on them, their priorities
yes.
not getting funded the way they want them to be funded?
Yeah, and part of that is this impasse over how to pay for transportation programs that we've talked about a lot. Mm. Okay, you and I found, I think you use the term treasure trove in the new
yeah.
Marquette Law School poll. Let's start among the Republicans. Carson, 22%, Trump, 19%, Rubio, 19%, Cruz, 9%, Bush, 6%. I asked Charles Franklin, the pollster here, this is the first time Carson has led. Mm-hmm. Significant?
Well, if you look at the margin of error, it's
yes.
with the bump
4.2%.
So, well, for Republicans, it was 6.1 or something
you're
like
that. You're right. Thank you.
So, overall poll, yes. But so the movement may just be statistically not significant. But you are still seeing Carson and Trump at the top of the pack. Now, Fiorina was in decent position last time. She's dropped off.
Yeah, she was at 11% in September.
A little deeper in those numbers. overall electorate, 49% of the people surveyed, all registered voters, want somebody who's from outside the system for president. Mm-hmm. 45% out of 41, someone want somebody with experience. There's a thirst, if you will, for an outsider. In the Republican sample, it's even a higher number of people who want an outsider, if you will. That explains the Carson Trump thing. Now, what's interesting about Carson is all this is happening, same time he's saying things that you just, if you're a professional political operative, you're going, how is this guy still in the running for president?
Right.
His own operatives in the New York Times trashing him on foreign policy. He doesn't grasp what's going on.
They say we cannot take him to school on foreign policy.
And this is all happening, by the way, in the middle of this, you know, kind of environment in light of the Paris attacks,
yes,
where you would think that foreign policy would be elevated as an extra sensitivity. He's still doing well. As we pointed out to me, the average Wisconsin Republican vote, primary voter is not reading the New York Times. So they're not paying attention to those things. The average Wisconsin voter in general isn't really plugged in this election yet. They're seeing, like, the coverage of the presidential debate, or they're seeing, you know, the occasional news story, whatever they're reading. But they're not really plugged in. So Carson and Trump, it may be just because they're outsiders that they're being attracted to them. And for Carson, it might be that, you know, Trump is kind of like abrasive at times. Carson is this, like, kind of nicer, gentler version of the outsider.
Yeah.
So maybe people are drawn to him because he's not this abrasive Trump type guy.
We saw in the new poll, Rubio gained 5 percentage mm-hmm. points. Cruz kind of edged out Fiorina, mm-hmm. who had 11% in September, but she didn't score, you know, she didn't do very well. And then Bush, 7% in September, 6% on the latest poll.
All these numbers are fascinating, but until we see ads run in Wisconsin and a real campaign built here, I wouldn't get too excited about it. But for right now, I mean, Carson's in an interesting position.
Well, it is, and it's also interesting because these numbers came after the debate that was in mm-hmm. Milwaukee, which Governor Walker hosted. Okay, let's look at the Democrats in the latest MU poll. Hillary, 50%, Sanders, 41%, 9 percentage point difference.
Yep, she hits 50%, always a good mark in yep. any kind of election.
Yep.
This has Biden out of the race now, so that helped, you know, draws that out. So it's really truly a Clinton Sanders O'Malley, although O'Malley's just kind of hanging on by a thread.
He's
if you
an
will.
Asterisk.
There's still a thirst for an outsider. It's interesting too. If you look at the survey results of the head-to-head with the Republicans, Sanders was better than Clinton. Now the question is kind of why. One thing that Franklin said was that there seem to be some Sanders voters in those head-to-head matchups that aren't jumping on the Hillary bandwagon when it's her instead of him versus Carson or Rubio or Bush or Trump. Why is that? Are they Democrats who are a little bit hesitant to get on the Hillary train just yet because they want her to be pull the left mm-hmm. a little bit more, be more progressive, then they'll feel better about voting? Will they come home mm-hmm. come next November? All kinds of questions like that you can't really pick out of a poll like this, but our theories about why it's happening.
Well, you're talking about the head-to-heads. I didn't get too excited about the head-to-heads because most of them I saw were within the margin of error.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now let's talk about U.S. Senate. Feingold, 49%. Senator Ron Johnson, Republican, 38%. Significant because Feingold has been able to, over the last 2 months since the last poll, maintain a double-digit lead.
Yeah, Franklin talked about there have been four polls now, I think, first one's in April, that have shown him largely with the double. Now, there was one that was 5 points, but for the most part, it's been double digits. It's been fairly consistent, and it has done nothing but feed the perception that he has an edge over Ron Johnson mm-hmm. going into next fall.
And then the governor's approval rating, 38% approve, 58% disapprove. Last MU poll, he was at 39.
Mm-hmm.
So this is...
37.
37.
He's ticked up 1 point.
Thanks for the correction.
So that was his all-time low is 37, too.
Right. What's your takeaway on the... But this comes after the governor has been around the state saying, remember me, I'm your governor, I really like being governor, you know, let's be friends.
Rome wasn't built in a day, neither will his reputation be regrouped, if you will, in a month.
So is your takeaway that he's not been forgiven by most Wisconsin voters for saying, I really, really want to go to the White House?
It is a number of things. If you look at the numbers, people aren't happy about the jobs picture. Now we're seeing that more people now are saying that other states are creating jobs faster than Wisconsin. That's an issue. It's all happening in the middle
Oscar
of all these.
Oscar Mayer, Tyson Foods.
All these big announcements are going on. That's muddled the message from Walker about unemployment rate is 4.3%. October had 15,000 new jobs created. All these good things are going on, these expansions over here, seeing big-time layoffs over here. That's muddled the message a little bit. He hasn't really had an agenda so far to kind of say, now I'm back, these are my priorities going forward. So there are issues like that from the workout.
When he signs the GAB bill and the campaign finance bill, Do you think he'll do it in the privacy of his office again? Because you remember the old days when governors had press conferences to sign bills they were proud of? Mm-hmm. Is he going to just put out, you know, a 4:30 press release, I just signed the GAB abolishment bill and the campaign finance bill?
Good question. Those are better base bills than they are general election bills. If you look at the Marquette numbers, they show a couple things. One, these big ticket items we've been talking about for weeks, people aren't paying attention to them.
We will get to that. Yeah.
It's not registering, I'm not paying attention.
Yep.
And two, some of these things like campaign finance are very unpopular for people who do know what's going on.
Yeah, we will get to that in a second. Okay, it was the first poll. The reason we like this poll, because it was post-debate, mm-hmm. and it was post-Biden exit, and it was also post-Paul Ryan ascending to the speakership of the U.S. House. Paul Ryan job approval, 49% favorable, 34% unfavorable, 17% no opinion. Takeaway?
They aren't that much better than his numbers were back in 2014, I think it was. So a little bit of an uptick. The guy is fairly decent numbers in the state. Especially if you think about it, he's unusual, Ryan, in some ways, that he is very much a figure in Washington. But in Wisconsin, yes, he's known by the base. He is not like up in Wausau doing tours or in La Crosse doing stuff. He is a first district guy. He says it. When he's home, he's in Janesville watching his kids play sports, spend time with the family. He is not kind of a, like Walker, traveling state constantly. So those are good numbers for a guy who's not really the face of the party in Wisconsin.
I was also intrigued because pollster Franklin said, would being speaker help or hurt Wisconsin and his first congressional district? 23% said being speaker would help the district. 63%, almost two-thirds, shift his attention elsewhere, implying that he wouldn't bring home the bacon, the old Washington term.
Well, Ryan said we're done with earmarks. We're not going to do that anymore. And two, you know, yes, he's going to be speaker. He has said, I'm going to be back at home on the weekends. I'm not going to be on the money circuit constantly kind of thing. So, yeah. And if you also look at the numbers in his district, he's not going to be in any trouble there anytime soon.
But let's go back to something you said earlier. It was a pretty significant victory that he just passed this major bill. Mm-hmm. Tighter screening on any Syrian and refugees from, I think, Iraq. Drew, I think, 47 Democrats, which, as you said, is a margin that would allow him to override any Obama veto. So that was a good first start in terms of passing something through
all
the full
these stories that I watched, have been talking about how he's met all these first tests, if you will.
Yeah.
So far, he's getting good marks as speaker.
The honeymoon goes on for Mr. Ryan. Mm-hmm. Now let's get into the nitty gritty. Pollster Franklin polled on some very current issues mm-hmm. in the Capitol. Four of them, I think, three of them have already been passed, or maybe I've got the numbers. But anyway, shall we change the civil service system and replace the civil service exams with resumes? 30% yes, 19% no, 50% no opinion. 50% no opinion? Mm-hmm. That just...
Do you think that excites people? I mean, like, let's be honest. The average Wisconsin cares about his or her job, kids' school.
Packers lost three, man.
Tax bill, yeah. Things like that.
Wisconsin needs to beat Northwestern tomorrow. Go ahead.
Who gets excited about Snowstorm civil coming. Service? People in government get concerned about that, not the average voter. It's not a sexy issue.
Okay. Well, let's continue. Shall we replace the GAB with election and ethics commissions, which the governor will soon sign? 25% support, 28% opposed, 47% no opinion. Again, are Republicans out there acting on things that are not at the forefront of the people you and I meet?
How many people know the GAB, like what it is? Or the government? How many really study it or are really familiar with what that agency does? How it operates. I mean, you're reshuffling the organization of the committee. It's not breaking through. This is a challenge for Democrats. We talked about this before, where they want to make this argument of Republicans have consolidated power and they're being more arrogant and they're shutting you out. How do you make that argument when these things are not breaking through to people? They don't really know what's going on with
that.
But
the term I used yesterday in a show is that the cop on the elections, campaign finance, and ethics beat just got fired. Mm-hmm. I mean, that point isn't resonating out there based on this.
No, not at all.
Okay. Next one, should we borrow $350 million more for highway projects, which we talked about it last week. Joint Finance voted 10-6. 38% support, 34% oppose. Only 1 in 4, no opinion. So this is a more high-profile issue, but they're split.
Yes, this actually is very consistent with what they've been before. Now, sometimes I ask, should we borrow more money or raise taxes? That's kind of a more interesting question at times.
Yes.
To figure out where the public wants to go. But that's something that people kind of hits home a little bit more about the projects in their backyard. Plus, two, it's just barring. There are certain words, I think, in government that kind of get people's dander up or, like, get their attention. Mm-hmm. GAB means nothing to me, but borrow money,
snore. Okay.
That means something to me.
Okay. Now, let's deal with the issue of campaign finance reform, another bill the governor's going to sign soon. Franklin asks, should we double campaign contribution limits, allow unlimited contributions by individuals to parties? 13% no, 61% opposed, 26% no opinion. Wow.
Well, it's money in politics. Nobody likes money in politics. Even people in politics don't like money in politics. But does that bill drive you to vote next fall? That's the issue for Democrats making this argument again, is can they make a plausible argument of this is a problem, this affects you, how? How does this change my life as a voter if they're getting more money from people? That's the difficult or the challenge for Democrats next fall.
Okay, now I want to quote from page 3 of the summary of the MU poll, and it says this, JR. We've just talked about how the Republicans have acted on major issues that the public largely mm-hmm. has no huge interest in, no opinion on. Now, there's this line, page 3 from the summary. 31% say they approve of the way Republicans in the legislature are handling their job. 60% disapprove, and 9% say they don't know. Does acting on some of these issues, in light of 31% up, 60% down, is that... does that suggest that some Republicans are going to be in trouble in November 2016?
Separate out the two questions. How many people like Congress?
None. Very few.
But they like their congressmen, right?
Yeah.
Similar dynamic here where they hate the legislature, but they like their individual lawmaker. And remember, too, the maps have been drawn by Republicans. It's not a statewide question who gets elected next fall. It is a district-by-district question. These maps are done very well, very good for Republicans where they feel like, hey, we might lose a couple people next fall, but we've got a good map for us. So it's not that big a deal in some ways. They don't like legislature. It does show, though, this, the second question, Republicans need a better message, if you will, to take to voters before next fall. They don't want to end it on the transgender bathroom bill.
Right.
They want to talk about, you know, jobs,
right.
Preventing heroin overdose, you know, battling heroin, the John Eingren bills. They want middle of the road, positive things in January, February, and go home. They don't want to do controversial stuff next spring. They have an issue of getting to those non-controversial things to kind of, one, put a better bow in the session, and two, create some separation from Walker. The governor's numbers are not very good. He has an issue that he's the face of the party, so Republicans in the legislature have to figure out a way to kind of create some separation, if you will, and show we're a little independent at times. Now, I don't know if they can do that, but it would help them a little bit, and they'll admit this, that they get a little bit of daylight between the governor's numbers and their own.
But here's my follow-up question. If the Republicans continue to act on things like civil service reform and telling school districts when to schedule referendums mm-hmm. and rewriting the workers' comp system, which Wisconsin invented, I don't know, in 1903 mm-hmm. or something, do the Republican legislators run the risk of hitting a tipping point on passing so much legislation that the voters are going to say you're doing too much? And
Absolutely.
That's why I go back to this 31% approve, 60% disapprove.
I've been asking that question for the last 3 or 4 years. At what point have they gone, you know, quote unquote, too far?
Too far.
The pendulum swung too much. And so far, that hasn't. I mean, you haven't seen them get wiped out in election yet. I mean, 12 and 14, they did well. So there seems to be something that they like about Republicans being in charge. Now, the challenge for Democrats is this. That's recruit well. You can't beat somebody with nobody. And two, they have to communicate better to voters in places like Chippewa Falls, mm-hmm. southwestern Wisconsin, the Wausau area. Mm-hmm. They need to pick up those seats. These are seats that are 50% Republican in a presidential year. If you can't win those seats, you're not going to close the gap. There are not enough Democratic seats anymore for them to be even up in the low 40s. They were drawn into basically, you know, the situation right now, plus their failures in southwestern Wisconsin, in the Chippewa Falls area. That's their challenge.
Okay, and just we've talked about how the respondents to the poll viewed Republicans. So, in fairness, how do the respondents to the poll view Democrats? For Democrats in the legislature, 39% approve, 49% disapprove, 12% said they don't know. Have the Democrats largely been playing effective offense, opposing this string of GOP priorities?
That's a good question. Those poll numbers don't really suggest that they're, like, breaking through.
They're not hitting home runs, man.
So that's an issue for them. Again, communicating those voters in those rural districts, that's where they got. They can't just win in Milwaukee-Madison anymore. They do well in Milwaukee-Madison. Great. But that's not where you win the Assembly back or the Senate back in Milwaukee-Madison.
Well, I was just intrigued. Okay, time for your stock report rising.
So, Russ Feingold, I mean, the numbers are good, but let's dive in a little bit more. On the one hand, He's doing well against Johnson, double-digit lead. You're seeing a tightening of his net positive rating. Back in April, before he formally announced, it was like net 21, right? Now it's down to like single digits. You're seeing ads running against Feingold, trying to like remind people of like the votes he took when he's in the Senate still. He's not the same guy you remember. They're trying to make that message resonate. So could you see an issue where he becomes Tommy Thompson of 2012 next fall? The flip side, though, is Ron Johnson is not positioned to take advantage of that if that happens. His numbers are not very good at all. 27% approval rating, that is like underwater big time for an incumbent. An incumbent in this four and a half, almost fifth year in the Senate. Franklin talked about this the other day, that there's a possibility that come next fall, they'll both be up underwater and not well-liked. The question then becomes, well, who wins the presidential race in Wisconsin? If it's Hillary Clinton, the Democrats, or whoever, that may dictate what happens in the Senate race. There is an opportunity for both of them to cut across that, but really look at history, and if they're not well-liked, it could be dictated by the top of the ticket then.
So you like the fact that Feingold's been able to maintain his double-digit lead?
It feeds a perception that he's doing well, okay, but there's a little bit of an underbelly there to kind of watch over the next year and see how that plays out.
Mixed.
So Hillary Clinton, we talked a little bit, you know, she's doing well in the primary, not doing that great in the general election anymore. Now, Grant, these are name ID polls. This poll is taken right after the presidential primary for Republicans, or presidential debate for Republicans, so they were knocking her. There were a number of negative stories about her. All that kind of stuff is out there. Once the ads fly, then you'll really see what's going on. And boy, by the way, Hillary Clinton, we've seen candidates aren't well-liked win before in Wisconsin. You tear the other guy down. So until you see her ad campaign, and that's, we're assuming she's been the nominee, against a Carson or a Trump or a Cruz or whoever it is, you can't really say for sure what's going to happen here. But there is a warning sign for her. If you look at deeper in the numbers, 52% of registered voters have a negative opinion of her. It was 50% 2 months ago. That's not going away. She is one of the most well-known figures in politics in the entire country.
Yes.
How do you change that dynamic between now and next fall? You probably can't. You got to go the tear the guy down method, which has worked. I mean, Jim Doyle was never very popular in the polls, won easily in 06.
Walker's very good at tearing down the opposition.
Walker's very good. Obama was not very popular in 12 before he ran for re-election. Still won easily.
Yep.
So there's a path there, but there's a little bit of, you know, some difficulties for her. And, you know, hey, Bill Clinton's in town this week raising money. She could stand to build an infrastructure here and get that going, and that would help her a little bit.
Falling.
So the governor, we talked about the numbers a little bit, but one thing that really should be troublesome for him, independents. Really upside down, almost 2-1, I think it was, for those who approve versus disapprove of his job approval. Walker's done a great job with the base. The base still is with Governor Walker. He's been able, though, to win in a sometimes bluish state by keeping independents with him, or at least splitting them. Right now, he's not. Now, the question becomes, does he care? Does he really want to run in 2018?
Yeah.
And two, how does he get him back? Well, you can have an agenda. He hasn't done that yet, but he's got plenty of time. He's got a budget next spring, or spring of 17, I should say, to introduce.
Yeah.
So you'll see a vision or an agenda then. He also has time on his side. Time heals all wounds. So he has plenty of time to keep popping around the state, talking to people, reducing himself. There is time. But again, those numbers, they're not real good right now.
Yeah, and I'm going to add another falling, JR, in light of the Journal Sentinel report yesterday that said WEDIC may have exceeded its authority to award tax credits by $21 million. I mean, you and I don't know anything more about that than what we read in the Journal Sentinel, but that continues to be a troubled agency.
The question becomes, where's the tipping point? Now, lawmakers, we talked, I think, last week about will they change this? Will they overhaul
it? Voss, Nygren, and Barkas saying, we're interested in reinventing WEDIC.
Where's the tipping point? And when do you do it? Do you do it in the budget next time around?
Right.
Remember, part of WEDIC's problems were it was created so quickly from commerce to WEDIC in like the blink of an eye. How do you, if you're going to rebuild it, how do you take the time to rebuild it?
Yeah, and we have a mea culpa correction to make on something we said last week.
Yes, I was incorrect in saying that
Campaign finance bill.
Yes, employer information goes away, but the occupation stays. So there's an old saying, if you put a gallon of knowledge in a shot glass of a brain every day, there'll be some spillage. So I apologize for that.
I'm not going to go any further with that. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And Rewind's going to take a Thanksgiving week break. We're going to eat too much turkey? No, but we're going to take a break. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Thank you.
Have a happy holiday.